Okay, well, good evening, everybody. So it's 5 o'clock, so I think we'll get started. And as typical, the intent is to go through each of the questions on this final exam. And I'll try to go through supporting one response versus others. But if you have any questions as we go along, ask them. Otherwise, we'll just keep going through each one at a time. So the first questions, 1 through 5, are general knowledge questions. Number one says, in a one-way ANOVA with P groups, Bartlett's test may be used to test, to evaluate the assumption of, and then some following responses. So we know with a one-way ANOVA, Bartlett's test is used to test the assumption, the underlying assumption of equal variance. And so if we go through each of these, A is equal population means for each of the P groups. That would have been the F test, so that's incorrect. Equal proportions for each of the P groups. In fact, with an ANOVA, we're assuming the outcome is continuous, so we're looking at means as the summary measure. So this one is incorrect. Equal population standard deviations for each of the P groups. So if our assumption was equal variance, then we're also assuming the standard deviation, which is the square root of them, are equal. So C was the correct answer. Does Bartlett's test test independence of the observations within and between groups? No. And normal distribution of Ys within each of these P groups, that's an assumption, as is independence, but Bartlett's test doesn't test those. So the answer here had to be equal population standard deviations for each of the P different groups. Okay, so moving on to number 2. Advance here. So moving on to 2, suppose a multiple logistic regression was performed in which all of the measured predictor variables were continuous and were centered at their median values. So then it's asking, what's the interpretation of the y-intercept beta naught, which is the constant? So if I wanted to just quickly write this model, I would say it's the log odds of some outcome equals beta naught plus beta 1, and we know that x1 is centered at its median, plus beta 2 times x2 minus its median, et cetera. So all are centered at its, at their medians. So if I went through and it had, if it had P predictors, we would go all the way through beta P times XP minus the median for that predictor or covariate. So what we can see is beta naught will be the log odds of the outcome when all of the variables are taking the value of their median. So let's see which response. Is it the log odds ratio when all the measured predictors are zero? So two things wrong with that. So first of all, it's not a log odds ratio. But secondly, they're not centered. They're not their actual values. They're centered. So this is incorrect. So A, we would say, is incorrect. The log odds ratio when all the measured predictors are equal to their median values, almost correct. It's just that it's not the log odds ratio. It's literally the log odds. So that's incorrect. C, the change in log odds when all the measured predictors increase by one unit. Well, this is certainly an interpretation of a beta. That's a beta J, for instance, that's not equal to the intercept, one of the regression coefficients. That's incorrect. The change in log odds for fixed values of the measured predictors of interest. Not correct. So the one that is corresponding to this model is that it's the log odds when all the measured predictors take on values equal to their median. Okay? Okay, first two, not bad. Third one. So number 3, consider a simple logistic regression model. The log odds equals beta naught plus beta 1 times x. So X is the single covariate of interest. The outcome Y equals 1 for diabetes, 0 if no diabetes. The covariate takes on the value of 1 for obese and 0 for non-obese. And we're asked to talk about the property of invariance. So I think one way to look at this is to set this up as a 2x2 table in which we have the outcome Y equals 1 or 0 for diabetes, no diabetes. X equals 1 or 0 for obese or not obese. And if we think about the property of invariance, it's allowing us to look at this 2x2 table and say that the odds of diabetes is the same in the group that's obese compared to not obese is equal to the odds of obesity in the group with diabetes versus not diabetes. So I've just said that by looking at the 2x2 table. I haven't drawn this out. I'm happy to do that if you want. But that's what we mean by property of invariance, that we can actually reverse the outcome in these two groups so that we can say that the log odds, we can model the log odds of diabetes, where it's equal to beta naught plus beta 1 times x, where x is the obesity variable, or we can model the log odds where y equals 1 stands for obesity, and the covariate is equal to the diabetes variable. And what we would see from these two models, if we ran them, we would see that the estimated coefficient for beta 1 would be the same. So by the properties of this 2x2 table, we can talk about the answer, which is B, the estimated ratio comparing odds of being obese and diabetic individuals. Sorry, is that it? No. Which one's the correct answer? Let's go through each one. A, the estimated ratio, well, you know what's wrong with this? This is what you shouldn't do when you're in an exam. You shouldn't ignore what's in the stub and look only at the responses, which is what I was just doing, because I was focusing on the responses and not what was set up in the question itself. Don't do that, right? Don't do that. So we're going to go back and say, what is this property of invariance? It means that the estimated ratio comparing the odds of diabetes in obese compared to non-obese is the same as the estimated odds of obesity in those with diabetes compared to those without diabetes. So, A, the estimated ratio comparing odds of being non-obese in diabetic individuals compared to that in non-diabetic. What's the matter with this? This needs to be the positive category, that they actually are obese, not non-obese, so this makes A incorrect. B, the estimated ratio comparing odds of being obese in diabetic individuals to that in non-diabetic, that is correct. That is what the invariance would be. C, the estimated ratio comparing odds of being obese in non-diabetic individuals. So this would have been correct if it had said diabetic versus non-diabetic, but it doesn't, so that's incorrect. The estimated odds of being diabetic in the combined group of obese and non-obese is just a red herring, a red flag, not right. The estimated ratio comparing odds of not having diabetes in obese to that in non-obese individuals. So that would have been saying that the odds ratio of diabetes in the obese versus non-obese is the same as in the non-obese versus obese, and that's not a property of invariance. So I'm hopeful that by looking at the examples that allow us to switch the outcome and the predictor, if we're coding them in the appropriate direction of y being the one being the positive attribute and zero the lack of the attribute, then the invariance of the odds ratio results in item B. Naira? Right. So the question was, could we talk about, you know, some numbers? So let's put in some very simple numbers. So I have a 2x2 table here in which I have the first column indicates those with diabetes and the second without. And so I'm totally making this up right now, so I hope this works. But let's say that we have 50 individuals with diabetes and 100 individuals without. And in the columns, what I'm going to see is among those who have diabetes, there are 30 who are obese and 20 who are not. Yes? And then we'll make up out of the 100 who don't have diabetes, what we would see is that in this case, 10 are obese and 90 or not. So this is fabricated data, not meant to do anything other than illustrate an example. So now we could say, let's look at what's in the in number 3 in the question itself. If this is the log odds of diabetes in obese versus not obese, let's just look at the odds ratio. So the odds ratio of diabetes in the obese versus not obese. So first we look at the group that's obese. What are the odds of diabetes? The odds of diabetes are 30 over 10. In the group that's not obese, the odds are 20 over 90. What is that reduced to? So it reduces to 3 over 2/9. What does that end up reducing to? I should have used better numbers here, but so it's going to be 27 over 2.
13.5.
Right. So let's just say it's 27 over 2. That's enough for us to look at for an odds ratio. So that's the odds of being diabetic in those who are obese versus not obese. Let's look at the odds ratio for obesity in those with diabetes versus not. So now we're going to look at the columns. So we have those who have diabetes, the odds of obesity are 30 over 20. What are the odds of obesity in those without diabetes? They're 10 over 90. If we go through a little bit of math, they should end up still being 27 over 2. So this property of invariance says that these odds ratios, the odds of diabetes in those with obesity versus not, is the same as the odds of obesity in those with diabetes versus those without. Okay. So moving on to number 4. Yes. Sure.
I ended up getting afraid, but like my project wasn't working out, because what if I had, like, you know, the odds of diabetes in a case over the odds of diabetes in not obese, and then I reasoned that the invariance is that they will take individually,
and
I
will
use the property, and then I ended up with odds of obese, even diabetes, over odds of non-obese, even diabetes. And I was
very,
like,
right. Wrong,
but I was very puzzled.
So I think I'm following what you're saying, is that you were trying to set up a logic that didn't quite work. And so maybe what we should do is write this out. I was using just the example of the, so what I had was the example of the 2x2 table. But if we said, what do we have that actually in words is the same, we would say we can talk about the odds ratio. So I'll say, you know, the first way to think of this is that we're looking at the odds of diabetes. And so I'll say DM for diabetes mellitus, odds of diabetes. And when we talk about the odds of diabetes in obese people divided by the odds of diabetes in non-obese people, this is the odds ratio that we're looking at, the odds ratio of having diabetes, but in one group that have obesity versus the group that don't. Then another way of looking at this is to say, if we want to talk about invariance, then we can talk about the odds of obesity in those with diabetes over the odds of obesity, so the same outcome, in those without diabetes. So this was the equality for the two odds ratios that we just looked at. But let's look at it in another way. We don't need to just look at it this way. We could have said another odds ratio would be looking at the odds of not having diabetes. So we'll call it non-diabetes in obese. And then the ratio that we're comparing it to, the odds would be the odds of that same outcome, non-diabetes in the non-obese. And the invariance then would have to say that would be equal to talking about the odds of obesity in the... So we set up the outcome, so I just switched the outcome to be positive for non-diabetes instead of diabetes. So we could say we're looking at the odds of non-diabetes in the obese versus the non-obese. So we're still going to have to talk about it in this way. The invariance would be looking at obesity, the odds of obesity in the non-diabetic group compared to the diabetic group. No? You don't think so? No, so you know, but I'm going to keep going. We can look at this at the very end if you want. The point is that if you're setting up the outcome as being diabetes, then you're looking at the odds of diabetes in the group that have the cofactor that's positive, meaning obesity, versus the group that doesn't. If we switch the outcome and the outcome is now obesity, then the odds ratio is going to look at the odds of obesity in the group with diabetes versus non-diabetes. I think what you were saying was that you were switching to the non-diabetic or the non-obese as an outcome. And those can be set up because our outcome is defined differently. But if we defined an odds ratio as odds of non-diabetes and obese versus non-obese, we would be looking at then the odds of obesity in the non-diabetics versus diabetics. Why don't we look at it afterwards? We can look at it, but there's probably 8 different ways we can set this up because of switching the Y's and the X's. Yeah. Your exam? Right, so I'm going to take a 2-second break. If anybody needs to pick up their exam, meet me at the table. So I would say if we still have a subgroup of you who have questions about this, you know, reversing the setup of the 2x2 table, we can talk about the invariance of the odds ratio then. Yeah. So the invariance, I think I'll take you back to the 2x2 table, it's switching it. So if I write out the models, I have the log odds where y equals 1 for diabetes equals beta naught plus beta 1 times obesity, where obesity is 1 for obese and 0 for non-obese. And if I keep them coded in that way as 1 and 0, then the equivalent model that will give me a coefficient, which translates to a log odds ratio that's invariant, is to say the log odds of obesity, what had been our covariate, equals beta naught plus beta 1 times diabetes, where diabetes is coded 1 and 0. So at the end, if you want to, we can set up some other ways of defining the outcome. You know, 1 is the non-characteristic, you know, versus 0 is the characteristic, and we'd see we could write those. But the answer that was correct was the one that we just referred to. So why don't we move on to number 4. So suppose that y is the dependent variable of interest, and x1 and x2 are independent variables or covariates. So key word here, in an ANCOVA analysis of covariance, the null hypothesis of interest is beta 3 equals 0, where beta 3 is the coefficient for the product of x1 and x2. So if one fails to reject the null hypothesis, so fails to reject that the interaction coefficient is equal to 0, then what would one conclude? So maybe we'll first say, before we even set this up, if we drew this as the outcome is y and one covariate is x1, what does an ANCOVA allow us to do? It allows us to see whether the slope or that linear relationship between y and x1 differs by level of x2. And if it differs, then one of these, for instance, we could write this out, but one is going to be given by beta 1 plus beta 3. The other slope is given by beta 1. So if beta 3 is equal to 0, then these two lines would be parallel, indicating that there's no interaction. The same relationship between y and x1 by level of x2. So I'm just labeling those. right? Because then their slopes would both be equal to beta 1 itself. So let's go through each of them. A, the variable X1 does not statistically or significantly confound the relationship between X, between Y and X2. So the key word here was confound, but confound isn't assessed with an interaction term. Confounding is assessed by comparing simple and multiple regressions. B, the variable X2 does not significantly confound the relationship. So again, not a way to assess confounding. C, the variable Y does not significantly confound the relationship between X1 and X2. So first of all, we're not going to be looking at the outcome confounding a relationship typically, but the interaction model and COVID doesn't allow us to assess confounding. So we're really left with D or E. The relationship between Y and X1 does not differ significantly by level of X2. That's correct. What about the next one? The relationship between X1 and X2 does not differ significantly by level of Y. So that's incorrect. That would only have been correct if we actually had a model in which we looked at X1 as a function of X2 and Y, and then an interaction term between Y and what else? And X2. So could it be done? Yes, but it's not the model that we're talking about, because we're talking about the coefficient for the product of X1 times X2 when Y is the outcome. Okay, so D was the response. So now we're beyond the general questions. We have a scenario, questions 5 through 11, that concern the results of a randomized placebo-controlled clinical trial of 207 total patients that investigated the effectiveness of antibiotics, amoxicillin, and then a topical nasal steroid as treatments for acute sinusitis. So there were four treatment groups that are given here. One of them had two placebos. They were the control group, antibiotic placebo and steroid placebo. Two was antibiotic therapy plus a steroid placebo. Three was an antibiotic placebo plus a steroid therapy. And then four had both active therapies, antibiotic and steroid. And then you're told the outcome of interest was the presence of symptoms at 10 days after treatment, so presence or absence. And then you see a table here that shows the number with symptoms in the numerator over the total treated in each of the four treatment groups, as well as in the marginal totals that are showing the therapy and placebo groups. So overall, we can see that 65 of the total patients had symptoms at 10 days out of the total of 207. And then you're told you have some models that go along with this as well. So you have the raw data and then the models that go along with this. So in number 5, it says, suppose we fit a model that had no covariates at all. So how would we interpret this model? No covariates means log odds of symptoms equals beta naught. So if that's what we would set up as a model, then by exponentiating both sides, we would say that the odds of symptoms is equal e to the beta naught. So from the table, we're comparing across all treatment groups. This is the overall odds of symptoms. So what are the odds of symptoms? It's the number with symptoms divided by the number without symptoms. And we have that information from the table because we know that there were 65 who had symptoms, and that means that 207 minus 65 is the number without. And so the odds, does it look like we have a number here that looks pretty good? I think it's going to be 65 over 142. So this answer would be B. So I know that this is the simplified version of the odds. The odds we could also say is P over Q, the proportion with symptoms, which is 65 over 207, divided by the proportion without symptoms, 142 over 207, but that reduces to 65 over 142. So A is wrong because A is actually just the proportion that have symptoms. C, well, what does C look like? C looks like it's taking all of the numbers of symptoms and putting them in some ratio, which is not correct. And D is the log of the proportion with symptoms. And what's E? This is actually the log odds, so it would just be beta naught by itself. And we were asking, what do you get if you exponentiate beta naught? Okay, moving on. So again, ask a question if you have a question. Otherwise, we'll keep going. So far, so good? Except for maybe the one where we want to talk about invariance of odds ratios later. So next one is six. Consider model A with only the covariate of antibiotic treatment and the identity link. So I've inserted in model A here so we can look at it together. So model A says the probability that Y equals 1, meaning the probability of symptoms, equals beta naught plus beta 1 times antibiotic. And now we'd also go back to our table because the model is actually just representing exactly what we have in the table. So what we have here is if you consider only antibiotic treatment, what are you ignoring? Steroid. So if we consider just antibiotic, we're really looking at the last column that allows you to look at antibiotic therapy in the first row and antibiotic placebo in the second row. And that, those are the data that are being used in this GLM model. So, key points. Identity link means we're going to be talking about risk difference. The model actually sets it up so we know we're talking about the risk or the probability of symptoms as the outcome. And then Stata gives us that little tip that says the coefficient for beta 1 is a risk difference. So that would say if we have this model set up, as in model A, then beta 1 is just going to be the difference in the risk of symptoms between the group coded 1, which is the antibiotic therapy group, and the group coded 0, which is the antibiotic placebo group. So I think we have the numbers here. The risk of symptoms in the antibiotic group is 29 over 100. The risk in the placebo antibiotic group is 36 over 107. And it looks like this answer is E. And if you actually used your calculators to do this, you should see that it's the same as the coefficient we get here, which is a negative 0.046. Yeah. Sound good? Okay. Number seven, consider only whether individuals were treated with antibiotic therapy or antibiotic placebo. Set up the appropriate 2x2 table of symptoms versus treatment, and then what would you see from a chi-square test of no association between symptoms and treatment? So, in fact, we have the information all here. So let's see if we can set up a small 2x2 table here. So what we have is antibiotic therapy, antibiotic placebo. We have symptoms and then no symptoms. So the antibiotic therapy, this was a group that had 100, so that's my row total for that. 29 had symptoms. So what are we left with no symptoms? 71, and the antibiotic placebo group had a total of 107, of which 36 had symptoms. So that means that how many?
71
did not. And so now we have the 2x2 table that we could now set up. Now, we can set this up, but what would have been another easier way without setting up the table, given that you had model A? Model A is actually the same as a 2x2 table because we just have outcome, symptoms or not. and antibiotic therapy or not. So what do we see that we have here? We have the Z test, right? We have the Z test. So this Z test is testing the hypothesis that beta 1 equals 0, no association between antibiotic therapy and symptoms. So the Z test is negative 0.72, and its p-value is 0.471. So we know when we have a 2x2 table, the chi-squared test is going to be 0.72 squared. And what's the p-value? The same thing. So we could have gone through all the all the steps, and we can still do that of setting up the chi-squared statistic. We can do that. But what we should be able to recognize is that actually we're going to get a non-significant p-value. And if you square 0.72, has anybody done that? It's 0.52. Right? And the p-value is greater than 0.05. So we should be able to just directly go to A, say, fail to reject the null hypothesis of no association, conclude that there's no statistically significant difference in the proportion with symptoms by antibiotic treatment versus placebo, chi-square 0.52, p-value greater than 0.05. That would have been the shortcut. How many of you did the shortcut? Did you do the long cut? Okay. But the long cut could use the shortcut formula for the chi-square, so you probably did that. Do we want to set that up and go through it, or are we fine with skipping it? How many would like to go through it? Okay. So just help me. I'm going to insert a new slide here so that we can just repeat that table a little bit bigger. So we have symptoms, no symptoms, and then we had antibiotic therapy and antibiotic placebo, and I'm just going to go back and say 100 antibiotic treatment, 107 antibiotic therapy. I remember that those with symptoms were 71 in both cases, and then what were the other numbers?
29 and 36.
So the row totals were 100 and 107. The column totals are 65 and 142. They should all add to 207. So if I did the chi-squared shortcut formula, I would take A times D minus B times C squared times the overall sample, which is N, and divide that by the product of the row and column totals. So what's N? N is 207. A, B, C, and D are the cells of the table. The row totals, R1 is 100, R2 is 107, C1 is 65, C2, the column total for no symptom group, is 142. So if you plug those in, you would get 29 times 71 minus 36 times 71, that entire quantity squared, times 207. And then we would divide by 100 times 107 times 65 times 142. And at the end of all of that, you would get 0.52. It's still a shortcut formula. It's much better than doing it by hand to calculate observe and calculate expected and make the subtraction from observed. Though you could, right? We could have taken observed minus expected squared over expected. But the intent of this question was actually to recognize you had enough information to go on by squaring the Z squared to get the chi squared. Okay. Okay, then let us go on to number 8. So these data are now set up as a generalized linear model that has two predictors. X1 takes on 1 for antibiotic therapy, 0 for placebo antibiotic. X2 is 1 for steroid therapy and 0 for steroid placebo. So now we have some matching to match the link function with the regression coefficient and the appropriate interpretation from a model that is set up on the right-hand side as beta naught plus beta 1 x1 plus beta 2 x2. So if I see link identity, right away I'm thinking
risk difference.
So I'd scan through here and say that there's actually only one risk difference. And in fact, beta 1, since it's the coefficient for the antibiotic therapy, will be the risk difference for symptoms by antibiotic use fixing steroid use. So number 4 would be the link identity. Do we see any others? Are there any here that aren't that could also be a link identity that aren't here? There's one more. So this is saying we could also say that beta 2 is the risk difference for symptoms by steroid use. Fixing antibiotic, right? That would also have been a risk difference, but it's not listed here. Okay. Link log. If we say link log, we didn't touch a lot on that, but when we said link log, we said it's not an odds ratio, it's now a risk ratio. So we have a couple here that say risk ratio. We just want to make sure that it makes sense, that beta 1 is the log risk ratio for symptoms by antibiotics use fixing steroid. Beta 2 is the log risk ratio for symptoms by steroid use fixing antibiotic use. So both of those are interpreted using link log. And then link logit always will give us a coefficient which is a log odds ratio. So we have two of those. Log odds ratios for symptoms by antibiotic use fixing steroid use. Log odds ratio for symptoms by steroid use fixing antibiotic use. And none of these were none of these. Okay. Yeah, Sarah. Right.
That it would be D.
That's right. So if any of these had said beta 1 is a odds ratio, beta 1 is a risk ratio, then we would have had to have said none of the above, because those are not the direct interpretations of the coefficients, but rather the exponentiated coefficient. Okay. Onward. So in number 9, we're moving into model C, where we're told that the 95% confidence interval for the true relative odds, which is another way of saying odds ratio, for symptoms in those treated by steroid versus not, meaning steroid placebo, but adjusting for antibiotic treatment is what? So we actually see that the steroid variable is the second covariate. Its coefficient is beta 2. So we see it's estimated here as B2 negative 0.0163, its associated 95% confidence interval for the true beta 2 is given here as negative 0.605 up to positive 0.573. But this is asking not for the log odds ratio, but rather the odds ratio. So in order to do this, we would exponentiate negative 0.605 and exponentiate positive 0.57. If we do that, we will get the 95% confidence interval for the true adjusted odds ratio. And by exponentiating, we should get something that looks like this. 0.54 to 1.77 corresponds to the p-value, suggesting not statistically significant. It overlaps 1. So no statistically significant difference in the adjusted odds of symptoms by steroid versus not steroid after adjusting, it's implied after adjusting for antibiotic. So the answer here we were looking for is D. The problem with the other ones, they either are looking at the log odds ratio or they're looking at the wrong coefficient. Okay, 10. So now model D is a model where it has an interaction coefficient, and we're asked, how do we interpret the coefficient for the interaction term? So here's model D. Model D says log odds of symptoms equals beta naught plus beta 1 antibiotics plus beta 2 steroid plus beta 3 antibiotics times steroid. So we know that we generate an interaction term. We're doing a logistic regression model. We get these coefficients. And in a logistic regression model. Our beta 1 and beta 2 are both going to be interpreted as log odds ratios, but beta 3 is not a log odds ratio. Beta 3 is a difference in two log odds ratios, but a difference in two log odds ratios, a difference between two log odds ratios is the same as the log of their ratio. So the coefficient is going to be interpreted as the log of a ratio of two odds ratios. So now we have to say, what are those odds ratios that we're talking about, right? So we're going to be looking at the log odds of symptoms in the group that has antibiotic therapy and steroid therapy. Do you want to write it out? Yes? Okay. Let's write it out. Okay. So really the simplest way to make sure that we convince ourselves of this is to say we have a log odds model, log odds of symptoms. We have beta naught plus beta 1 times antibiotic therapy, I'm just going to call it AB, plus beta 2 times steroid, I'll call it ST, plus beta 3 times antibiotic times steroid. So if we want to isolate beta 3, one way that we can do this is there's two ways we can do it, but let's think of each, and we can also talk about in some relationships. So we could say if we were looking at antibiotic therapy taking on the value of 1, then how would we write this? We would say the log odds is beta naught plus beta 1 times 1 plus beta 2 times steroids plus beta 3 times 1 times steroids. So we end up having two constants, beta naught plus beta 1, and then we have a coefficient, which is beta 2 plus beta 3 times steroid use. Now, what we can also do is look at those who don't use antibiotics and write this model in that subgroup as the log odds equals beta naught plus beta 1 times 0 plus beta 2 times steroids plus beta 3 times 0. So what we see here is that beta 2 is the coefficient for steroid use. So by writing these out, by subtraction, we could isolate beta 3. So should we subtract them? Okay. So what we're going to have are the log odds of symptoms. Given we're in the antibiotic group, equals, well, let's do the subtraction all on one side. So the first part was, say, look among those with